And it's Tuesday morning time for another Tom and Shane podcast. Glad to have you along with us. Thanks for being here. And we'd like to remind you, if you're just stopping in for the first time, or if you're a longtime listener, don't forget to subscribe. It doesn't cost anything. You don't get any notifications. You don't get emails. You don't get bombarded by anything. All you do is hit subscribe, and nothing's going to happen to you. If you ring the notification bell, you'll be notified every time we have a podcast. And like us and leave a comment, because YouTube likes that kind of stuff. And we're brought to you by StreamYard. If you would like to make broadcasts like this, you could do it with StreamYard. There's a free description in the description below, or free link, I should say, in the description below. And if you'd like to support us monetarily, $3 a week, or $3 a week, $3 a month, $36 a year, you get a bunch of perks for doing that. Wow. So, good morning, Shane.
Good morning, Captain. We're looking at some serious stuff today, because your president, you know, he just blew out the doors today, and you know, announcing the ban of oil from Russia. So here we go.
That's for sure. Yep. We're going to talk about, are we energy independent? That's our topic for today. We got to get into that pretty good. And I guess one of the things we've got to do, Shane, we've got to get started what is energy independence anyway? It's pretty hard to figure that out sometimes.
Well, today it and in the 21st century, it's a remarkable reality. I mean, in the 19th and 20th century, you know, the U.S. was the largest producer of oil and largest exporter of oil around the world, and finished products right up to World War II. And you know, the Middle East, oil wasn't really discovered until the 30s, and then not really developed until the 50s, 60s. Mm-hmm. And integrated, you know, in the 70s, and with Nixon, and then on with Reagan, with, you know, vertically integrating all the operations in the different countries where they produced the oil, refineries and shipping. And so, yeah, the change has been dramatic in 120 years, 140 years.
Yeah, in 2020, the U.S. exported more petroleum than it imported for the first time since 1949, Shane. That's according to the EIA, of course. And as we know, Biden just this morning cut off oil from Russia, and we're looking at we were spending $75 billion from Canada and 4.7 billion from Russia, and if you throw into Mexico, all three two-thirds of our oil come from the nearest neighbors we have, and a lot of people don't realize outside of Russia and Canada, Russia's the next closest country over across the
Arctic
Strait there to
Alaska.
So there we find ourselves. So it's pretty interesting. Yeah. Right now, up until this morning, I guess, we were getting about 7% of petroleum imports, including crude oil from Russia. So that's where we find ourselves this morning. So
that's right. And it's amazing reality that a lot of Americans don't maybe understand or appreciate that, you know, the amount of consumption that the world has. We're, you know, pre-COVID 2019, the world consumption daily was 100 million barrels a day. And the United States was at 19.4 million, 19.5 million barrels a day. You know, and then it fell significantly to 12 with COVID, because no one was driving a car.
Yeah.
And, but you're back.
Actually, it was 12, fell to 11.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. And then it bounced back last year to around 18. So you're heading back to where you're going to be producing 19 or consuming 19 to 20 million barrels a day.
Yeah. Bob Vandervalk says President Biden could not help himself criticizing oil companies for gouging. And I might point out that Bob is the editor of the Bakken Oil Business Journal. So he's been a guest on our show from time to time. Yes, and we're not going to be energy independent anytime soon. Energy secure is a correct mantra. So I'd agree with Bob on that one. So, we're going in that direction. So before we get into the real meat and potatoes, you have some history of oil embargoes and things like that to go through real quick, if you could do that.
Sure. Look, back in the 1930s, Hitler was expanding his military and doing his awkward occupations, without firing a shot in Europe into the 40s. Japan had invaded China. There was a massive war going on in China, Japan was after Manchuria and all of its resources, because Japan was importing like 90% of its oil from down in the South Pacific into China and New Guinea and Indonesia, principally, that the Dutch had, and then into China with the French had. Anyway, long story short, they got into a squabble with the French and forced an arrangement or an agreement with the French. And as a result of that, July 26, 1941, FDR froze all the assets of the Japanese in the United States because of their threatening mantra, and same thing we've been hearing from Putin for 3 months. They've been doing it, and on August 1st, 1941, he signed executive order. I have it down here.
Does it matter what number it is?
Yeah, it is. Executive order 9066. That's how busy he'd been. Anyway, bottom line was, on the 1st of August, he put an embargo on all oil to Japan. Well, there you go. 4 months later, the Japanese attacked in December and considered it an act of war that he cut the oil off to them. So, this is the thing that we should be concerned with. I mean, Putin could very well look at this, as the Japanese did, as an act of war, cut, preventing them from selling oil around the world.
Yeah. So, well, some interesting things happened. One thing that's going on right now, Shane, is the Biden administration, they're freezing, or there's a decision pending in court, I guess, that under Obama, the government estimated the damage from wildfires, floods, rising sea levels was $51 for every ton of carbon. Trump lowered that to $7 or less, but when Biden took office, all his executive orders, he took it back to $51, and the courts are saying, well, we don't know if we agree with that or not, but that's where we stand. Biden has passed policies that could negatively impact domestic oil supplies in the future. But thus far, the price surge is primarily a result of 3 million barrels per day of oil that was lost in the spring of 2020, and it hasn't fully recovered as of yet. And I read the other day they're going to open the reserves in the Balkan. They're going to start up some of those wells, but they're having a hard time finding people to man those wells and get them going and all of that. Let's see. I already put that up. Sorry.
Yeah. The point you're making, and it's really important for everyone, is that because of what happened with COVID and because people were ordered indoors and weren't driving, all the things Americans enjoy to do for entertainment with expendable income, go to restaurants, go to bars, go to theaters, go shopping, all these things ended. Your government took it away from them. So, if you don't get in a car, you don't spend money. But the minute you get in a car and turn it on, you're spending money.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Cars on the road and so forth. And another example of this was, of course, all the reports coming in across your country in 19 and 2020 and 21 about the drop in hospital emergencies. Well, of course, because no one's on a motorcycle, no one's on a bike, no one's in a car.
No one's driving around. So
that's right. So all these things affected everything on a countrywide basis. When you started it back up again last year, rightfully so, and particularly in Texas and Florida, you saw the change, and you know, mm-hmm. the amount of oil consumed started to grow again.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, the other thing, if we wanted to make a, how do you tell if you're energy independent, we would need to add up all our energy. That'd be oil, natural gas, coal, renewables, and then subtract our net energy consumption. So when we say net, if we were to import a million barrels of oil a day and we produce a million barrels of finished product, it doesn't actually impact our energy independence, even though it increases the gross overall consumption of the product. So, you know, getting oil from other places may or may not affect us.
That's right, and it's quite fascinating because when you talk about the largest oil companies in the world, you know, mm-hmm. Aramco of Saudi Arabia is number one, Shell, United Kingdom, and of course, China National Petroleum Corporation. China is, you know, the fifth largest producer of oil. BP mm-hmm. in the UK, Exxon in the US, and Total Energies in France, and then Chevron in the US. And then comes the three Russian companies. That's why I'm telling you, Lukoil, Gazprom, and Rosneft. And and then Valero Energy, oddly enough, is the next. So those are basically the 10 largest oil producers in the world corporately. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the bottom line is that, you know, the U.S., you know, largest import of oil to the U.S., of course, is Canada, 1.5 million barrels a day, then Saudi Arabia. And, you know, and as you say, the list goes down from there. And, you know, Mexico, and then it used to be Venezuela, but they're shut in. But apparently your country's willing to talk to them. Iran was in the top 10, but not now. And of course, Russia. But mm-hmm. this is just like World War II. When I look at the comparisons, I mean, the cause of World War II was energy. Mm-hmm. I mean, Hitler went into Poland to get coal because they learned how to gasify and liquefy coal into oil and gas. Japan attacked the U.S. on December 7th because the same day they launched attacks and took over Indonesia, the Dutch, and to get to their oil reserves. So that's that people sometimes forget that it wasn't to take the U.S. out of World War II by attacking Pearl Harbor. It was to take them out of preventing the Japanese from going to the South Pacific to get what? Mm-hmm. Oil.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're looking at the same thing 100 years later. Like, here we go again over oil. And there's plenty of it. You know, it's mm-hmm. the largest commodity in the world. I mean, and, you know, it's previous high is 147. We mentioned last week and, 2 weeks ago even, that we expected it to go, to 125. And I expect it to go past 147 to 150 by May 1st. It's 130 right now. That's U.S.
Yeah.
Brent, or 127 U.S. Brent in London is 131. So, we're talking $14 and it's past its all-time high. So
yeah. Well, the other thing we got to think about, Shane, is summer blends are coming and they're more expensive right. than the winter blend. And the process takes longer. Overall yield from a barrel of oil is less. And so that could add another 15 cents or so to the cost of the pump just for that flip over. So,
that's right. And it does every year, you know, it's just what happens. a lot of states like California have their own environmental state agency. Mm-hmm. So they require 7 different types of gasoline and so forth for California.
Yeah, so, I think Chicago's got like 4 or 5.
That's right. And New York and the Northeast, you know, everyone has a different amount or a different type of gas that they require or want.
Yeah. Well, one thing, Shane, that President Obama did back in 2015, he signed an energy bill and he traded oil for some of the Green New Deal stuff. And what he did, he opened it up so that private drillers could export oil. Prior to 2015, oil exports were insignificant. By 2019, were exporting 3 million barrels per day. And the the independents, the private drillers, could now export their crude oil where they weren't allowed to do that before.
And it was really important because the Brent price set in London was 10% different to to what we saw in the United States, what we see and still do in the United States with, you know, East Texas. So if you can sell if you can sell your oil, you know, somewhere else for 10% more.
Well, yeah.
why wouldn't you? Right?
Yeah, why not do it? Yeah. So, yeah, they got an opportunity to get on the open market. Annual crude oil generally decreased between 70 and 2008. In 2009, the trend reversed and production began to rise. And in 2019, U.S. crude oil production reached a high of 12 million barrels per day. And more cost-effective drilling and production technologies help drive that, and and also the Texas and North Dakota jumped in, so that helped. And we were unfortunately they declined to 11.3 million barrels a day in 2020, so that was a pretty good drop, and that was in March and April of 2020.
That's right, and this move came from 8 million barrels a day, you know, which was back in 14, 15, and slid right, you know, up to, you know, 12 million plus, and particularly, you know, you keep mentioning the Bakken, you know, there were major productions going on, and we were there because we. It was astounding what people at McDonald's in North Dakota are getting paid $34 because
I know they needed warm bodies to stay open. Yeah. So I don't know what they must have been charging $50 for a Big Mac.
No, prices didn't change. No. That's how much profit they made. But Continental Oil was the leader in the Bakken, and so it's like you commented. You know, they shut a lot of these wells in because there's no market for it, you know, over the last few years. And it's going to take time to wind that back up.
So, well, in the Bakken, they're having a problem finding people, just like again. Across the country. They're having a hard time finding people. And Bob points out, Summer Blend Refinery will be complete by the end of April, and California's already switched over to it. So they're, with their weather, they're, you know, summer and winter is not much in California. Well, certain parts of it anyway. I should mention that some of them are year-round pretty constant temperature, but other places it varies. Okay, let's see. Some other things that I wanted to cover here real quick. We don't know if the full year of 2020 has been accounted for, if we lost our energy independence for that year. If it turns out we did, the single largest factor will be that COVID. But one of the problems, Shane, is that demand recovered faster than the oil could get back into, you know, back into growing. So it's quite a deal.
Well, that's right, and this is why this deal now, again, this is like World War II all over again. So China and Russia do this deal, you know, to swap spit, coal, and money and oil. You know, China's at 9.7 million barrels a day consumption. Mm-hmm. They're number two. Japan's 4.5, and India's 3.2. Then you have Russia at 3.2. Saudi Arabia, amazing, 2.8 million barrels a day. So those are the big users. The interesting aspect of all of this is how this, again, matches up with back in the 1930s and in the 40s that started World War II. I'm not trying to be a purveyor of bad news, but you know, numbers don't lie. People do. So you got, and no one's talking. The amazing thing, Tom, again, every time we have these conversations, the most aggravating thing is, you know, like on Fox, the only thing they said was they asked the energy secretary how much oil the U.S. consumes a day, and she couldn't answer. She said, I'll have to get back to you. How could she not know that?
I was going to say, isn't that the first thing you learn when you walk in the door of that thing? So, Well, we asked the question is, are we energy independent? And according to the, again, the EIA, they tabulated U.S. energy consumption for in 2019 and 2020 and determined that for both years, both full years of counting all energy sources, we were energy independent in 2019 and 2020. So that's that, that I guess, is settled science, if you want to call it that.
That's right. And so this is why everything that you're watching, be careful, you know, what you don't wish for.
Careful what you wish for, you might get it, huh?
No, not what you wish for, but what you don't wish for.
Yeah, and
you might get it anyway. And but I'm staggered by the numbers that we've gone over, because it's the turnaround is so phenomenal. I mean, it's so quick.
Yeah.
And to accelerate it won't be difficult. But as you and I have told our audiences for 10 years or more, we got to get off oil for trains, planes, and automobiles. We need it for petrochemicals in the next 100, 200 years, if we're going to be around. I don't know.
Yeah.
Putin may change all those plans.
I was going to say, even if we're 100% electric vehicles, you're going to have lubricants for those electric vehicles in order for them to run. Your bicycle's going to need oil for the chain and the wheels. And plus, wherever you are right now, everything you can see, smell, taste, feel, or touch, it probably has oil in it somewhere.
And the comparison is the little ball bearing, you know, created in the 1700s.
Yeah.
And the little ball bearing, without it, there is no industry. It's amazing to realize, but you should go just Google ball bearing and see how many things rely on ball bearings to operate. Cars, industry, anything that turns, needs ball bearings. And as Tom's pointed out, you need lubricants for the ball bearing to work or it just burns out. So, everything else that we walk through every day, 90% of everything we walk through every day is petrochemicals. So clothing, food, utensils, appliances, paper. I mean, all of it has petrochemicals. So
amen to that.
All the oil advocates are telling you that, you know, by 2052, the world is going to be out of oil. And no, it's not. But the likelihood is that, the production of major areas like Saudi Arabia could, just based on, you know, the amount it's pumped in these giant fields it's had for 50 or 70 years, it could very well be out, not the list, but we'll see. But we still have to be forthwith about the information and where we are.
Well, progress never stands still. You know, we weren't able to drill down 2 miles and turn right, you know, before, but now we can, you know. So I think the way we eject oil is in the future is going to be different than we do it now. Supposedly there's 47 years of reserves, around the world. I wrote on it the other day for Bob's journal. So,
And another important aspect of this is new technology is needed, because any well ever drilled, I don't care where the oil well or gas well, well, not gas, but where the oil well has been drilled, all of them, 100%. They've only recovered 18 to 20% of the oil in that reservoir. So all the oil ever discovered is 80% of it is still in the ground.
Still there,
So it's, and so when they talk about oil production today and what's left, it's not what's still in the ground. It's what can get out of the ground naturally with, ground hole pressure or secondary or tertiary or third ways of getting it out of the ground, pumps or different things, steam and different things that they use. But new technology has a great opportunity. Now, give you a perfect example is in Ohio. The average depth of wells in Ohio are 600 feet. And Ohio was one of the largest oil producers back in the early 1900s, back in the 1920s, 30s, and 40s. So 80% of that oil is still there. Which is why, and I'm not going off topic here, but I think that Tesla, the great Elon Musk has shown his technologies work. Well, he's got a drilling company, and he drilled a tunnel under budget, and under time, 11 miles for Los Angeles. But that's for. I think what that's for is to go start using it to go, you know, 300-500 feet down in an area like in Ohio, and drill a tunnel through there to have the oil seep into the tunnel and be pumped out. To me, that's a great concept. I'm sure that's what Elon Musk is looking at, because there's so many across. Oh, you're talking about Ohio to Pennsylvania. And even up in southern New York, you know, these original wells, again, they're less than 1,000 feet deep, less than, you know, 600 feet deep.
Yeah. Well, the final conundrum we have here, Shane, is you got the green people on one side that want electric cars, excuse me, and want to get rid of fossil fuels. And then on the other side, we're sitting here saying, well, you know, I don't like paying $5, $6, $10 at the pump. So where's the happy meeting ground there? Where do these two people kiss and make up?
There isn't, because your electrical grid is at 110% now, and you're getting brownouts across your country, and they're going to get worse. You know, they're talking about spending $600 billion on putting up charging stations. Well, yeah, where's the electricity coming from?
Look, yeah, well, that's the thing. Yeah,
62% of your electricity is natural gas and coal. That's what it is. Don't yell at me. You know, go yell at your government. So you know, like, you're going to end up producing less electricity, and there's going to be more demand for it. Like, where do these people wake up in the morning? You know, they don't. I don't even think they'll wake up in bed. I think they fall out of bed at night, and then wake up on the floor and go, "Oh, well, that's why we can't have oil or gas." You know.
Yeah. That's for sure. Well, the Chinese have 1,100, more than 1,100 coal-fired power plants.
That's right.
And, you know, India's got a couple hundred. We've got a couple hundred. Japan's got them. Japan's got about 90, I think. Indonesia's got about 80, something like that, if I remember correctly. But power is going to be an issue in the future, because, as you rightly pointed out, again, we've got desire trying to catch up with technology that doesn't exist yet. Just like,
that's right.
You know,
and then you look at nuclear, like we have because of now Ukraine, and, you know, the largest reactor in the world in Europe. The Russians have taken over 25% of the electricity for the Ukraine, and, you know, they're after another one. And so, you know, France is off the, you know, reactor thing. They had 28. They're shutting them all down. Germany's shutting theirs down. That's why they want to do this gas deal with Russia, because they're going to natural gas. No. So, you know, it's this transition on the Green Deal is rather funny. Yep. Europe going from nuclear clean to natural gas, which we're told is dirty, which of course it's not.
Well, it's cleaner than coal by a long shot. One of the reasons we're not doing nuclear is the liability. Three Mile Island set that off way back when, and the liability of somebody saying, okay, let's put a nuclear power plant here in the middle of New York City. Well, that's prohibited because of the liability. If anything were to go wrong, like the China Syndrome movie or something like that, then we're screwed. So if we can get that liability resolved somehow, I think we might see more nuclear in the future.
That or hydrogen. If you want to learn about how possible that is, look up Star Scientific and HERO, H-E-R-O, their HERO machine. And it takes hydrogen. It splits it. So the byproduct's fresh water. And then they use the hydrogen to produce electricity, which is basically what the sun does. I mean, the sun is, you know, hydrogen and helium, and that's what we've got. And that may be the future for electricity, you know, just to replace what we're still using, which are, you know, the discoveries of a man from the 1880s, right? You know, you know, these giant machines and dams and coal plants, you know, that we use to produce electricity. And hopefully we can get away from that.
Are they still planning, or are they actually building, Shane? Are they building from the tar sands to the West Coast in Canada?
Oh yeah, it's almost complete. Yeah, they're, and they've already got agreements with China and South Korea and Japan to consume. Yeah, it'll take a little bit longer, but yeah, you missed the train, buddy.
Yeah, on the Bakken pipeline. Yeah,
yeah. If you take in the reserves, tar sand reserves Canada has, we have the largest reserves of oil in the world right now. Now, that's the largest producible reserves in the world is Venezuela.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, but you know, before we couldn't deal with the Madero and his brother. Now you're going to, and Mexico is having a problem, and with the drugs and everything, and. Yeah. And the corruption. So the problem with Mexico is it got a lot of oil, but there's so much corruption they can't find people to do it. And
Venezuela, they've got to be dancing in the streets at 120 $170 oil.
they can get out of the ground, but they can't get out of the country because the country's imploded and there's just no. Nothing's operating.
Somebody will go in there and get it.
Well, at some point,
that's what I'm saying. They eventually will. So,
I mean, worst case scenario, I'm just saying this, in the next 20, 30 years, you could see the U.S. take over Mexico, take over Venezuela, just seize the, North and South America, for all the minerals and oil, and try and keep themselves segregated by two oceans, which has been your calling since your country was founded, right?
It's really going to be interesting to see where we're headed, and one of the things I should point out is that we're going to be covering this in more detail on our Saturday radio show. And if you read the crawl, we're on every Saturday 8 to 11 Mountain Time. You can listen to us live anywhere in the world, KMMSAM.com. Click listen now. There's no sign up, no email, no information needed. There's nothing to join or anything like that. You just come and listen. And you can call us, you can text us, you can do any of those things. So we hope that you will join us on Saturday, because we have a 3-hour show, so we can cover this in more detail than we can here in a half hour on YouTube and Facebook and LinkedIn and Twitter.
Right.
So
I want to make a terrible observation, but I think it's important. Okay, look, since 1945, after the end of World War II, till today, there have been more wars killing more people than in World War II. There have been over 51 different civil wars around the world. Right now, as we speak, there's 12 going on, worse than what's going on in Ukraine. Not that it's not bad. It's terrible. But the starvation, the murder, the rape, the pillage, the destruction of infrastructure, families, and whatever else you want to add to the list has been going on since the end of World War II. And even in the 21st century, with the exception of a little bit of what we saw in Kuwait when the U.S. went in there, and then, of course, what went on in Iraq and so forth, and Syria, the U.S. hasn't seen this type of stuff since Serbia back in the Clinton days. So. It's a regrettable thing, but apparently it's the only thing that they have to talk about in the news cycle, and it's not good, but it's not new. This has been going on for 3,000 years, folks.
There you go. All right. Bob says we're still receiving the oil sands crude from Canada via the rail cars at $10 a barrel. The XL Keystone Pipeline tariffs would have cut that in half. So thanks for that.
I don't know where you're getting that. No, the U.S. pays the same price for the Canadian oil as anyone else.
Well, let me preface that by saying Bob is the editor of the Bakken Oil Business Journal, and I would defer to him on.
Well,
he's talking about the cost per barrel to transport it. So yeah, not right. talking about that.
That's what I was just going to say. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, the Burlington Northern is now running the oil south to the Caribbean refinery. And we all know Berkshire Hathaway, you know, the great Warren Buffett owns Burlington Northern.
There we go.
He's adding $10 to every barrel that he's running south. So
all right. Bob says, great update. Dan says, listen on Saturday. Absolutely. Thanks, Dan. Dan will be in the front row on Saturday, I'm sure. So we're happy to do to do that. So, all right, guys, I think we've whipped this dead horse enough. We hope you got a little information you can use. And as I say, we'll cover this a lot more on Saturday, 8 to 11 Mountain Time, KMMSAM.com. Click listen now. No sign up, no email, no personal information needed. Just put your ear up to the door and listen. We'll be fine. So, all right. Well, thanks for watching. Hey, don't forget to subscribe. Ring the notification bell. You'll always be notified of our next podcast. And also like us. And please leave a comment. We'd like to know what you think. So if you're on Facebook, LinkedIn, on YouTube, or on Twitter, by all means, let us know what you think. So, all right, that's going to wrap it up for us. Thanks, Shane. Thanks for all the good information. And we've covered this. I think we may have a couple more comments here that I want to get in.
Great conversation, discussion. Yeah. And, you know, it's now on in the record, like a lot of our other shows. Mm-hmm. And so people can go back and reference it and have the information, because we don't just have a conversation. We provide information. And that's what's so important, because it's the basis of our opinions that you and I hold.
Well, that's certainly true. Don't forget, as Shane pointed out, you can listen to our past shows at KMMSAM.com, including this one. We tape everything. So this will be up online shortly. If you want to replay it, either audio or video, either one, they're both there. So we hope that you will take advantage of that. So, all right. All right. Well, thanks. Thanks, Shane. Thanks for being here. Thanks for all the viewers, listeners, whatever, and comments. They're very helpful. We always like that. So we will see everybody next week, or next Thursday, I should say, at 10 a.m. And we are gone for now. So we'll see you down the road. Bye for now.